This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A new plan to pay for Medicaid expansion received a substantial boost yesterday when a House committee voted 17-1 for a bill called HB 1696. The measure finds new ways to keep the program going as federal funding for it drops to 90% over the next few years. The bill also adds new work requirements and new copays for recipients. Right now, 47,000 Granite Staters get health care through expanded Medicaid, a benefit that stems from the Affordable Care Act. But while the program is supported by a wide array of interests, from business leaders to hospitals to substance abuse providers, at the State House there are differences of opinion over how to proceed. Some Republicans worry that the bill's finances are on thinner ice than supporters contend. Meanwhile, many Democrats take issue with the copays and the work requirements and have their own ideas about how to pay for the whole thing. Today in The Exchange, once again, Medicaid, what the Republican bill looks like, and all the conversations swirling around it. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We have four guests in the studio. Frank Edelblue is here, Republican representative from Wilton. He's raised some concerns about Medicaid expansion. Representative Edelblue, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
Also with us, Joe LaChance, Republican state representative from Manchester, prime sponsor of the bill I mentioned, HB 1696. Representative LaChance, thank you also for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Cindy Rosenwald, Democratic state representative from Nashua, sponsor of HB 1690. This is a bill that would maintain Medicaid expansion as it is, and we'll talk about that. Representative Rosenwald, thank you also for being here.
It's great to be here.
And also with us, Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And Steve, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Steve, I do want to start with you. Just a little background, please. Medicaid is a health insurance program for low-income folks with both federal and state participation. It's been around for a long time, but only covered, Steve, certain populations. Who was original Medicaid for, and how did Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act change that?
Right. Well, I'm going to go all the way back to 1960 when Medicare was established. Medicare is for the elderly, and that's acute hospital and physician care. Medicaid is a federal and state partnership, as you mentioned, and it was originally designed as a safety net program for really vulnerable populations, low-income families, people with disabilities, both behavioral and mental health disabilities, and has a long history of reaching out to other vulnerable populations. In the 1990s, it was expanded to include low-income children and pregnant women. And really what the Affordable Care Act did was essentially extend it to low-income individuals, regardless of their characteristics. And by low-income, I mean less than about $11,000, $12,000 for an individual in terms of their income. The ACA established this program and said, states, you have to expand to this group of people. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't coerce states into doing this, and gave states the option to expand. And over the next year and a half, there was a commission established. There was legislative debate and engagement. And out of that emerged the New Hampshire Health Protection Program, which extends coverage to low-income individuals with incomes less than 138% of the federal poverty level. And it's kind of complicated about how you get to where we are right now, but where we are right now is a set of resources that are purchasing health insurance coverage on the health insurance exchanges for those low-income individuals.
Whew. We've done it the New Hampshire way, and it's supposed to sunset, Steve, by the end of this year, hence all the activity around finding another way to continue it.
That's correct. And there are really two issues, I think. One is a general, an ideological one, which is, do we want the federal and state government to be stepping into this market? And the other one is a practical one, and that is really how are you going to finance this and what is it going to look like? And I think those are have been the major components of the debate.
So traditional Medicaid, Steve, is you must be poor and fill in the blank, disabled, pregnant, have young children. This new expanded Medicaid is just you must be poor.
That's correct. Yep.
And that's the issue. The concern is that, well, able-bodied adults, why aren't they, out there working and paying for this on their own?
That's right. And that's one of the reasons why in the original conversations about this expansion, there were conversations about work requirements and personal responsibility through cost sharing and the like. CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, have historically frowned on requiring work requirements and have said that they will not allow that within the program. That was, I think, what stopped this conversation in the past session. I think the policy constructs that are emerging now are different and may actually get approval if it were to go forward. So I'll look forward to hear what the representatives have to say about that.
Yes, and we will bring in our state reps absolutely in just a second. But one more question for you, Steve, and thank you for that background. Here we are now, 47,000 Granite Staters now receive coverage under this new Medicaid expansion, not even talking about traditional Medicaid. As somebody who's looked at this for a long time, does that surprise you?
Well, when you look back prior to the expansion, prior to the Affordable Care Act, there were about 170,000 uninsured individuals in the state. And the Affordable Care Act had certain provisions which were going to provide subsidized insurance coverage, and Medicaid was going to provide at least some possibility. And we did some estimates. We're about exactly on where we thought we'd be, based on the income distribution and participation rates and the share of the population that would seek coverage for Medicaid as opposed to private insurance. So I don't think anyone's surprised. I think it was we expected that this would be a significant expansion in coverage, and it has been.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, we're taking a look at Medicaid expansion and some new ideas around how to continue the program. 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Joe LaChance, I did want to turn to you. As I said, you're sponsor of this bill to continue Medicaid expansion, but under a different way than how we have it now. Tell us how this would work.
Thank you. Again, thanks for having me on, Laura. I sponsored this legislation because I've seen the positive impacts that the New Hampshire Health Protection Program has had for the people in my community. I serve I'm lucky to be one of the representatives for our state's largest city, and I see this program working. I see people getting the health care that they need. I've learned and continue to learn more about the thousands of people in Manchester that just contact me. How do I get insurance? I need insurance. I'm in a bad time. I'm disabled. Whatever the reason might be, I'm a problem solver. And we have an issue with Medicaid and the funding going away. How could I bring a responsible solution to the problem without taking 47,000 people and throwing them on the street? Because that's not what I want to do. These are the most vulnerable people in our population. So I saw some of the bills that were being presented through legislative service requests, and I think there were three. And I said, would there be a way that I could have this bill funded without general fund New Hampshire taxpayer money? And I started thinking about it. I was told it couldn't happen. And I wanted to think outside of the box. And we had the insurance companies and we had the hospitals agree that they are stakeholders in this. And in order to continue the program, I just didn't see money coming out of the general fund for this during this tight fiscal time right now. Therefore, if I could come up with a solution to have the state not have to pay and the stakeholders pay, that's a win-win for everybody.
Well, and Speaker Jasper said on our program a couple weeks ago that he supports the idea of continued Medicaid expansion, but not pulling from the general fund. So again, just background for folks, the federal funding goes down to 90% in a couple of years, not 100% going away, but 90%. So the state has to fill in a gap of about how much, Representative LaChance?
Anywhere between $25 to $35 million. And It is a pretty significant amount of money. But again, if the stakeholders want this federal funding, the federal money, there's about $450 million plus out there in federal funds that we can bring into our economy. This is money that goes to Washington that we get 83 cents on a dollar approximately back, where you have some states that are getting $4 back, like Alaska. Let's get some of the money back into our New Hampshire economy. Let's get people health insurance they deserve. Let's get people the jobs they deserve. And we can't afford not only for the uncompensated care, but we also need to make sure that we're not picking up that $450 million tab that we're not going to get from the federal government. But we'd also have to take care of uncompensated care. I think we are going to be in a grave problem if this bill doesn't pass.
So the hospitals and insurance companies are going to basically kick in and cover the $25 to $35 million that will be needed.
That is correct.
Were you surprised that they agreed to that so readily?
You know, I'm not. You know, I think you and I, if we were to get 95 cents on a dollar, that's probably a pretty good deal, right?
So let's bring you in, Representative Edelblue, and you too, Representative Rosenwald. Representative Edelblue, you raised some concerns about this approach that Representative LaChance has put forward. Tell us what's on your mind around this.
Right. So I do have some concerns, but I actually think we all share sort of a common idea in the idea of, in the concept of a safety net. But the problem is that the way that this program is being constructed is it constructs what I'll call a security fence. And we're actually locking people into this stasis of poverty. I mean, if we go back in 1985, we had a little over 3% of our population could not afford health insurance, and they were dependent on Medicaid. By 2009, we were over 13% of the people could not afford health insurance, and they required Medicaid. With this expansion, we're close to 1 in 5 families in New Hampshire cannot afford to buy health insurance. And so the question that we're trying to answer here is not, you know, should we buy more people health insurance? The question is, what have we done to our insurance markets and our healthcare markets that we've priced everybody out of the market?
Why is it so expensive?
Exactly. Why is it so expensive? I mean, this even goes really to the whole concept, and I don't know if we're going to get into the idea of uncompensated care, but the whole idea of so uncompensated care means somebody shows up at the hospital, they can't afford to pay their bill, and if they can't afford to pay their bill, then the hospital has to absorb that. That cost is kind of, you know, in a backdoor way, kind of spread among the population is how it's described. But really, the essence of uncompensated care needs to come back to the idea of, so why is it that now people show up at hospitals and they can no longer afford to pay for the services? The guy who's walking into the hospital these days, he's got a smartphone. That today, that smartphone in 1980 would have cost $1 million, right? And he's walking with $1 million worth of computing power in his pocket, but he can't afford to pay for his health care. So what have we done to our markets that we've not seen the same kinds of efficiencies and cost efficiencies driven into that system as well?
So are we barking up the wrong tree? Is that what you're saying?
I think that we're not really solving the problem. We're doing the classic political thing of putting Band-Aids on the issue. You know, Joe mentions he wants everybody to have a good job. I mean, that's the solution. We want people to have good jobs that they can afford to pay for health insurance. And that's really, I think, where we need to be focusing here.
So in terms of legislation, what would you propose as an alternative to what Representative LaChance is proposing or what Representative Rosenwald is proposing?
Right. So I think what we really need to do is, you know, the federal government is a big bureaucracy, right? We've got CMS, but they've got Departments of Defense and Education, everything else out there, right? There's no federal Department of Insurance because the federal government is not set up to structure insurance markets for states. So really what we need to do is we need to block grant this money back into the states. As Joe says, this is our money. Let's bring it back and let's construct a program that works for New Hampshire folks.
And there is a way to do that. It's something called Section 1332. I mean, it's on the books for states to do that, right?
There is a 1332 waiver that is available out there. And I think it's kind of coincidental that the 1332 waiver comes up, you know, on January 1st, 2017, when the current program that we have expires. So again, and it's called a state innovation waiver, and that's what we need to be as a state. We need to be innovating and creating new opportunities for our citizens so that they can afford health insurance, they can afford medical services.
Okay, and I can see everybody wants to jump in.
I know
on
they
that.
All, I'm sure 1332. They do. Yes.
But Reverend Rosenwald, I haven't forgotten about you. First of all, what are your thoughts as a Democrat, as a long supporter of Medicaid expansion, on what Representative LaChance is trying to do, trying to find this sort of middle way here?
The man behind the tree, basically. This is the way we do things in New Hampshire, is try to maximize other money. We do it in really all of our programs. Let me just say that the Medicaid expansion is probably the best way to maximize federal money, because in the rest of our Medicaid program, we get 50 cents on the dollar back from the federal
Medicaid.
Government. Some parts of it we get 65 cents. This is 90 cents, and it's written into the Affordable Care Act statute, so that is not going to change without an act of Congress and a presidential signature. But I don't see Medicaid expansion as a security fence. And really, if you look deeper into the 46,000 people who are currently enrolled, we need to understand that over the 18 months we've had this program, 75,000 people have been in, been out. So as people's circumstances have changed and improved, and perhaps they've solved their health condition, are able to work more, their income goes up, they no longer qualify. I think we've had a very successful program. We've also managed to decrease uncompensated care given by our hospitals by about $150 million a year, and that's huge. And that's why the business community supports the Medicaid expansion, because they've seen how it's favorably affecting the insurance markets. We've gone from one insurer on the health exchange to five. We've gone from 11 choices to 50 or 60. It's overwhelming. And the business community sees that their rates have become more stable. They like that. They want a healthy workforce, and they want stability of what they're paying for health care. I think this program solves that. There were things in the original version of House Bill 1696 that I wasn't comfortable with. High premiums on people who are already below the poverty line. We know from other states that it's so expensive and burdensome to collect those premiums that it really doesn't make sense.
And you guys got rid of those
that
yesterday.
Is now, well, yes, that's
in the
now
committee.
Not
yeah.
being considered. I'm still not comfortable with the work requirement. I think it's something the federal government hasn't approved. I think it doesn't really reflect an understanding of who our low-income people are in New Hampshire, but I also understand the nature of compromise.
Well,
and I think we've improved Representative LaChance's bill by having some carve-outs, people who are sick, people who are injured, people who are in court-ordered treatment, people who are caring for a dependent, disabled relative will not be subject to that work requirement.
And we should talk about the work requirements and the co-pays and so forth. Let me once again invite our listeners to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Now, when I mentioned the possibility of that waiver, the block grant that Representative Edelblue mentioned, I could see that you, Steve Norton, and you, Representative LaChance, want to jump in. So go ahead, Steve. Could New Hampshire just get a block grant, get a waiver, and do it our own way?
So two observations. One is that any negotiation is going to occur with the current administration, and the current administration has indicated they're not willing to go down this particular path. That doesn't mean that in the future we can't go down that
path. Even though it's in the law.
That's right. Well, let's talk about Section 1332. That does not allow you to waive the original provisions of Medicaid. That's only certain sections of the Affordable Care Act. So things about personal responsibility, the employer mandate, the individual mandate, those things can be waived, but the basic provisions of Medicaid cannot. In order to do what the representative is interested in doing, there is a provision, which is the Section 1115 component, which allows you to do that. And as a state, we've had this conversation pretty much every biennium for the last five about, do we want to take all responsibility for that and get all that money that gives us all this innovation and flexibility? And the answer is, in some people's minds, yes, in some, no. Largely not because of the fact that the administration has said they wouldn't let it happen.
Go ahead, Representative LaChance, real quick.
Thank you. I also think it's important that we talk about the substance abuse crisis that's going on right now. Not only do we have very little time to make this law happen, so the 1332 waiver, there's no time for it. And it might be an innovative approach, and we might be able to talk about that in a couple years. But we've got 47,000 people depending on us now. We need action now.
We will start taking your phone calls, your questions, comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. More on Medicaid expansion in a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, how and whether to extend the state's Medicaid expansion program. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. Find us on Twitter. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We had three state representatives here in studio, Representative Frank Edelblue, Republican representative from Wilton, also Joe LaChance, Republican state rep from Manchester, Cindy Rosenwald, Democratic state representative from Nashua, also with us Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, before we dive into the work requirements and copays involved in this bill that Representative LaChance has put forward, let's go to our listeners and hear what they think. And Jeff's calling from Laconia. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
First of all, I think it's important to say that I am a beneficiary of this program. It has helped me get the treatment needed. I'm a recovering addict. I've been clean for 15 months. And my question is, how will others get substance abuse treatment if this program is not reauthorized?
Okay, thank you very much. And by the way, Jeff, congratulations on being in recovery. I know that's tough, so thank you. Representative Edelblue, you want to jump in first?
Sure, I would love to jump in. And Jeff, congratulations. I think that's great, and I'm glad that you're getting the services that you need. I think when we look at the opioid crisis, too, we have to look at what the legislature has done over the last 8 years. You know, when we set up the alcohol fund, we committed to set aside 5% of that fund in order to be used for addiction recovery programs. We have consistently raided that fund and taken over $53 million away from that fund since its inception. You know, it could be that Jeff never would have entered into some type of an addictive behavior had we not redirected those funds and put them in the wrong place. This last session, we cut that from 5% down to 1.7% for addiction recovery. I just think that that is wrong, and that's not really what we should be doing.
So where will people like our caller find services? His question is, if Medicaid expansion goes away, where might I get the help that I needed?
That $53 million would be directed by the state into specific programs dealing with recovery issues, because that's really what it's for. That's why we set it aside. And it's really not a good idea that we have redirected that into general fund activities.
And a long history of dedicated funds being raided. Absolutely. Representative Rosenwald, go ahead.
Well, I'd say that $53 million would be general funds. So we would be dedicating much more general fund dollars. But Jeff, congratulations. I think it's great. I just want to point out that the Provider Community for Treatment and Recovery Services has clearly said the best way to stabilize the reimbursements for these services is to continue the Medicaid expansion. There are about 8,000 people who are eligible for those services, and almost 2,000 have been accessing them. We are slowly rebuilding our treatment infrastructure from the decline it experienced as we underfunded the drug and alcohol lines.
Let's take another call, Jeff. Thank you for that one. And Joy is calling from Manchester, your backyard, Representative LaChance. Go ahead, Joy. You're on the exchange.
Hi. I am also a recovering addict, and I have been clean for 5 months now because of the Medicaid services. I'm just calling to find out what is going to happen if the program isn't continued. What's going to happen for everybody?
And you've been getting Medicaid expansion, Joy?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for the call. And do you want to jump in on that, Representative LaChance?
Thank you. Joy, thank you for calling in. I want to congratulate you. Outstanding work on your recovery. I'm a disabled veteran. I understand pain. I understand what you're going through. We are going to work really hard to make sure that this bill passes. You are the exact reason why we need to make sure this bill passes. Where would you go? We have some private clinics out there. But right now, we have about 6,000 people who have used this benefit for substance abuse. This would not be the time to stop it. And I congratulate you with your sobriety. And I will work tirelessly to make sure that this bill passes. And please keep up the hard work.
Well, and represent the chance to you, Jeff and Joy, both accessing Medicaid expansion, both for substance abuse. What about the work requirements that your bill includes for them to continue receiving that benefit?
So on the work requirements, there's a couple different versions that have gone through. We have some on-the-job training exclusions. We just basically want a way to keep people who deserve the program on the program and keep the people who should not be there off the program. We have some community service, some vocational educational training. There's probably about 20 different things that we have in the bill right now as far as the work requirement.
There's an array of situations that folks have to present to say, I'm out there, I'm doing something.
Sure.
Steve Norton, you want to jump in? And the rest of you too. Go ahead,
yeah,
Steve.
I think from an outsider's perspective, both sides, I think, in this debate agree that anything that the state can do without breaking the bank to support individuals in a transition out of poverty is a good thing to do. And I think the question is going to come down to whether this is a punitive or supportive approach to the program. And I think one side would like this to say if you are not meeting these work requirements in some way, then you're not eligible for the program. I think the other side might agree to something which says just as we do with our low-income families and our Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, do we want to support these folks and give them some services so that they can make the transition out of poverty and potentially get a job? Now, remember, almost 50% of these individuals already have jobs. So it's a population that's trying to work. It's probably transitional. And with a little support, like the services that Representative Rosenwald might be able to talk about a little more, could be successful in helping people transition out of poverty.
So, Steve, work requirements are not a new idea. We have them with TANF or
That's
welfare.
Correct. That's correct.
So yep. You need to, if you're not working, you need to at least prove that you're either taking care of someone or in education or job training or making an effort.
That's right.
How has the federal government viewed work requirements when it comes to Medicaid?
Yeah, they've denied every request.
Really? Even though they are fine doing that with welfare?
Yeah. I think, and it was separated on purpose. The Temporary Assistance for Needy Family program was separated from Medicaid on purpose just to make this an insurance program. And so they have wanted to establish that. And I think it's unlikely under this administration that a punitive model would get approval from CMS at this point.
Go ahead. Yeah, Representative Blue, yeah. And then
well,
Cindy
so
Rosenwald.
Yeah. I think we all agree that, we're trying to lift people out of poverty. That's the ultimate goal and where we're trying to go. And that's the idea behind any type of a work requirement. We're saying, like, look, we want to help you get engaged in your society and the community so that you can lift yourself out of poverty. I might disagree with Steve a little bit. If you look around at the different states, what we've seen is that CMS has continued to allow more and more innovation in these 1115 waivers. So with each state, it seems like they're pushing the envelope a little bit further. And I quite frankly think that as a state, we need to be pushing hard on the CMS. Again, to Joe's point, this is our money. So why is it that CMS is telling us how to spend our money on our population? We need to take, I think, a harder line with them and say, no, this work requirement, as we've constructed it, is good for New Hampshire, and let's do it.
Is the work requirement, as it stands right now, and things are still in flux, but is it too broad, Representative Edelblatt, in your opinion? Job training, taking care of a child, there's a variety of examples, not just showing up to a job every day. Is that too broad?
So, again, there's been a lot of different ones that have been floating around. I think that, we're interested in jobs, but I think we're also interested in vocational training, I think, is a good use. As long as someone is moving in a positive direction, trying to lift themselves out of poverty, then I think that we want to help support that. Again, because we want to create incentives that cause people to want to lift themselves out of poverty and not be stuck in poverty.
Go ahead, Representative Rosenwald.
Well, there's a difference between the goals of the TANF program and the Medicaid program. One is a cash assistance program for people with young children in the home who are not disabled. One is a health insurance program for people who are either low income or low income, elderly or pregnant or a child or disabled. We have, as you said, the work requirements are in flux. And yesterday, in response to testimony at the public hearing about the kind of people who are enrolled and why they're low income, whether they're underemployed or they've had a job loss or they're taking care of a disabled relative, or they've fallen off a ladder, injured themselves, had surgery, can't participate for 30 hours a week, or they're in drug treatment, which takes most of your day if you're in the early stages of recovery. And in fact, if you're doing inpatient recovery, you're inpatient for up to 28 days in New Hampshire.
Would you rather not see these work requirements, Representative Rosenwald?
If I were drafting this bill, there would not have been a work requirement. The other bill that I am a sponsor on does not have a work requirement. I don't think it's the right thing to do for health insurance, because it almost says having a job is a risk factor for illness, that you only need health insurance if you are working. I wouldn't have drafted it that way, but that's the bill before us. I think it is likely to receive enough support, I hope, to pass both bodies. And I'm someone who understands the nature of getting to consensus.
Oh, you've been in the legislature a long time. So, yeah, Representative LaChance, what about that? Whose job would it be to follow up with folks to make sure that they were fulfilling that requirement?
You know, that would be part of HHS. And again, these are the details that, you know, will have to be addressed. You know, that's certainly a consideration. But again, to go back on yesterday, we had 17 out of 18 people in that committee. Bipartisan, overwhelming support in HHS for this bill. We'll get around what we need to fix. There's going to be some tweaks. We'll need to do that.
Okay, so here's another political question for you, Representative LaChance. Here you are, Republican. As you know, nationally, Republicans say their number one goal is to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. So how do you square up with that?
So there's two parts to that question. Number one, this isn't Obamacare per se. This is the New Hampshire New Hampshire Health Protection Plan. And we've done this the New Hampshire way. We've taken it's been to the court. It's been to the Supreme Court, Obamacare. It's the rule of the land. It's also been ruled that Medicaid expansion is up to the states. You can take it or leave it. We have it. We're faced with it right now. This is a case of ideology getting caught up. You know, I do not support Obamacare, and if we're going to get rid of Obamacare, we can't do that in the New Hampshire legislature. You can do that at the federal level, but we can't do that here. So I would not support Obamacare at the federal level, but it's what we have now, and it's what we have to do now, because we have 47,000 people who need this insurance. I just don't want ideology getting in the way of solving problems. That's why I continue to fight. Listen, I'm out of Manchester. The business community, the chambers, the municipal association, they all want this.
The New Hampshire Business and Industry Association.
Everybody, this is good. This is good for our state.
Go ahead, Representative Edel Blue, and then we'll go back to our callers.
Yeah, no problem. So I just I'm curious for Joe. I have a question really dealing with this is not Obamacare, because in essence, the way that this bill works is we've got what's referred to as a severability clause in there, which basically means we're delegating responsibility for crafting the New Hampshire Obamacare expansion plan to CMS, because CMS basically say we give them a bill and they get to pick and choose the provisions that they want or they don't want. So
CMS, again, Center for Medicaid Services.
Center for Medicaid Services, exactly. So what happens if we send this 1115 waiver up there and they just pick and choose the ones they want and they send us back a bill that we don't like? Is it too late? Is it too bad? We just have to take it?
Because it's 90% still federal funded in a couple of years. So that's their buy-in.
Although that's funded with our money, coming back to that original point, right? But so my point is, though, so we as a legislature, are we really doing our job if we're basically crafting a bill and saying, here's all – really what we're doing is we're crafting a shopping list and saying to CMS, you know, here's all the things that we want. You pick the ones that you think are good for New Hampshire and then you send us back what we're going to have.
So from that philosophy, you would say, no, don't, you know, this isn't a New Hampshire thing, because we're still asking for, you know, yes, please, no, thank you.
I really think that we need to have a stronger line with CMS and say, like, this is what's good for New Hampshire. And we tell them what's good for New Hampshire, not let them dictate to us what's good for New Hampshire.
Representative LaChance?
I respect the good representative's opinion. However, what is your alternative? In a few short months, there's going to be no funding. Are you prepared to kick 47,000 people to the curb? I'm okay accepting federal funds for this sort of program. It's short term. It's a New Hampshire plan. It uses private insurance, and it moves people to primary care with no new taxes. You know, when you get people out of the emergency room and you get people going to a primary care physician for the first time instead of going to an emergency room for a cough, not only are you reducing healthcare costs, you're getting people healthier. So then it goes on to the jobs. They're healthy. They can work. It's a snowball effect. But bottom line is, if the federal funds dry up, the program winds down. If either the insurance companies or the hospitals don't pay, the program winds down. This is a win-win. This is not a lose-lose for New Hampshire. This is a win-win for everybody.
So, Representative Blue, I'm going to have to let you jump in there. Go ahead, since he asked you a direct question, then we'll go back to our listeners.
But really, the rhetorical question kind of goes back to Joe again. So he's just saying this is a New Hampshire program, but the point is this is a New Hampshire shopping list of what we'd like to see that we've given to CMS and say, you come back and tell us what we can or we cannot have in our program. And I think that we have over-delegated our responsibility as legislators to the federal government at that point in time.
So a philosophical disagreement here,
Absolutely.
Steve Norton.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And this is not a new disagreement. This has divided the conversation about health policy for as long as I've been involved in New Hampshire. And it's a very complex question that involves negotiations with CMS because unless we decide we don't want the money, we have to negotiate with CMS. It is a program that we could opt out of completely if we would like to, but we have chosen not to.
Let's take some more calls, all of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email, exchange at nhpr.org. And Jerry's calling from Freedom. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure, I've Jerry. Go ahead.
Other times. And I'm a fine physician up in the Conway area. And I do always find it interesting when I hear these conversations about people who actually don't sit in the office and see who these people really are. Those of us who are out in the trenches trying to give care, we'll see what happens when people are not covered by insurance and cannot access care. And I think Representative Rosenwald made a good point about that, that this is actually a health insurance program. It's not a handout. And I think very specifically of three patients in this last year, all three men, working age, and were working. One, a young guy getting 29 hours a week, so he didn't get health insurance. Another one, working a parade of seasonal jobs like we often have up here in the North Country, didn't have health insurance. Another one, self-employed carpenter who had an injury and was not able to work. But two of those three had neglected medical problems, one of them being disabling, for which they could not be treated for an extended period of time because they had no insurance. When they finally got Medicaid expansion coverage, then they were able to get appropriate care. So I think it's important that something be done to continue this program. If there is going to be some kind of work requirement, we have to realize many of them do work, and it has to be a very liberal work requirement because of the fact that the employment picture is not always rosy for everybody to have 30 hours of regular, steady work.
So as a doctor, Jerry, you like getting people, your patients, covered with this. Do you have – sounds like you're okay with the work requirement.
Well, I think I would – actually, I don't feel strongly, but I think if there is going to be a work requirement, it has to be has to have a number of different exclusions and loopholes because the very people that I'm just mentioning who are not able to get a full-time job. I mean, they're working, but their employer gives them 29 hours a week because that allows them to not pay them for any insurance.
Okay. Jerry, thanks a lot for calling in.
But it's important to realize that these people really still need care one way or another, and we just simply have to realize that health care is a right.
Okay. Thank you for calling in, Jerry. And we'll take more of your calls in just a moment. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We want your questions and comments about Medicaid expansion, how and whether to move forward. We're looking at some of the proposals in the legislature. And you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at New Hampshire's Medicaid expansion program and some new ideas about how to continue it when federal funding decreases to 90%. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Edelblue, did you want to jump in on Frank's call, the doctor who called in just before the break, saying, you know, he likes having his patients covered, and he says a lot of them don't have coverage because they work part-time jobs in the tourism business and, can't get health insurance through their
employers. Yeah, exactly. He gave us three really good examples. So you have one kid who's working 29 hours, and because he's working under 30 hours, he doesn't qualify for work-related insurance. Another person who's seasonal, moving from job to job, and another person who's a self-employed carpenter. I mean, this is, in my mind, indicative of what we've done to our insurance markets, because these folks used to be able to afford health insurance.
And why now, is it so expensive
exactly.
now?
So why is it now that the guy who's – why have we created a system, a perverse system, that the employer's not willing to let him work 30 hours because he's afraid he's going to have the cost of the insurance? Like, let's fix that problem. You know, how about the guy who's seasonal? Again, why can't that young kid who thinks he's indestructible still afford a $300 or $500, you know, catastrophic care policy to be able to take care of himself? You know, again, I think we need to provide a product in the market that helps people to take care of themselves. And then again, you create the right kinds of incentives in the system.
Well, and Representative Rosenwald, that's a critique that does come up about Obamacare, that once it passed, employers said, you know, I'm going to have you work 29 hours so that I don't have to provide that insurance. I know one gal who works at Walmart, and she told me that if she starts to approach 30 hours, they have her take a very long lunch so that she won't reach that 30-hour goal because they don't want to cover the insurance. So are there some perverse incentives in this Affordable Care Act that actually mean people have a harder time accessing care?
Well, I think there's been mixed information as to whether or not employers have reduced insurance benefits or reduced work hours on a national level. I've heard anecdotes that yes, and I've heard at conferences more general information that no, they haven't. So I'm not sure how many people might really be affected by that. But I also say that even if someone is buying insurance on an individual policy, and there are catastrophic policies available for young people through the Affordable Care Act still, their exposure for out-of-pocket costs if they do get sick or injured are so high that it could bankrupt them and stick the hospital with more uncompensated care burden.
See, so we keep coming back to it. If the cost is high, that's the problem. Can we attack the problem?
Well, and we've done multiple shows, and it sounds like we need to do another one on that basic question that you raise. Why is it so high in the first place? Go ahead, Steve.
I'd just say that, you know, the question about costs, in many respects, the expansion of Medicaid was a response to costs as opposed to potentially causing those increases in costs. So the reasons that health insurance premiums go up are quite complex, and Medicaid probably plays some role, but not much of a role.
Well, and speaking of Medicaid expansion, and again, Representative LaChance, your bill to kind of find a new way to pay for this. We talked about the work requirements in your bill. We heard from a doctor who said he hopes that those requirements are flexible to recognize what happens to folks. What about co-pays, Representative LaChance? What's involved in terms of that?
You know, the co-pays now are set in law as it is, but there were some co-pays that were in the original bill. Medicaid expansion bill that were taken away yesterday. But whatever is in law in place now would be the prevailing.
And this the bill, as it is right now, includes one additional co-payment, which is
a
new co-payment for ER use. $8 for the first visit, $25 for the second visit. Like, you know, most insurance coverage, if you go for an unnecessary visit, you have to pay some additional resources to cover the cost. From a public policy perspective, there are two sides to this. One suggests that this is a good individual responsibility component to this. On the other side, it's collected by the hospital, and there's some concerns about whether they could even collect it from this low-income population.
The $25 especially.
That's correct.
And how do you determine what's unnecessary?
Well, like everyone else does, if you go and you could have gone to your primary care doctor, then you're up for that cost.
But this is a copay due at the time of service. So before you've seen a doctor and been evaluated, the hospital is supposed to ask for your $25 or your $8 copayment. I think it's unlikely that before someone's seen a doctor that a hospital staff member is going to make that determination out in the waiting room.
Make a determination that it's quote-unquote unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to jump in, Representative Chance? Or
I think that's a fair representation. I think our medical professionals can make that determination. And you know, the responsibility for collecting is going to be on the health provider. At least the state's not worrying about collecting the $25 or the $8, you know, and I think that's important as well.
Go ahead, Representative Blue.
So just relative to copays, I think, again, just to put it into a kind of a broader context, and the goal of this program is not to increase the number of people on the rolls, but really to see a decrease in the number of people who can't afford insurance. We want the number – we want that $47,000 to 7,000 people to be, you know, fewer and fewer people until it's zero. When we structure copays, we don't want to create, again, these perverse incentives. So – if I'm at 138% of the federal poverty level and I have certain copays, when I jump up to 139% of the federal poverty level and I am kicked out of this program, you know, if it's going to cost me a whole bunch of money, then I don't want to earn that marginal dollar of income. And I want everybody to always feel like I want to earn that next dollar of income. So we need more of an on-ramp rather than this kind of flat scale that we've constructed so far.
Let's go back to our listeners. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Kevin's calling in from Concord. Hi, Kevin. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. This is Kevin Flynn from the Business and Industry Association.
Oh, hey, Kevin.
How are you?
Fine.
We just wanted to reiterate our support for Medicaid reauthorization. I know it came up during the panel discussion. As an organization, we feel that a healthy workforce is a productive workforce, and the concern for businesses is that uncompensated care is driving up our members' health coverage costs. That means less money in the employer's bottom line and more money coming out of employees' paychecks every week to pay for their health coverage. So we salute the efforts of lawmakers who are trying to get this done. We think ultimately it's good for business.
Well, and Kevin, let me ask you a quick question. I'm glad you called in. Some people say that Medicaid expansion and the Affordable Care Act overall gets businesses off the hook for doing what some people feel they should be doing, which is providing insurance. What do you think?
Well, we're not seeing that among our members.
That they're using this as an excuse to say, you know, Joe, I'd like to give you health insurance, but I think you just need to go on Medicaid or the insurance exchange.
Yeah, I mean, we represent our members represent one out of eight private sector employees. You know, more than half of them are small businesses. Those are just anecdotes we're not hearing.
Okay. Kevin, thank you very much for calling in. Representative Chance, and yeah, go ahead.
You know, if I could follow up to that call as well, I think it's very important that there was testimony that came forward from the Manchester Welfare Office that just after 1 year of this program, the towns and cities are finding a major reduction in welfare payments made to people that are in need at the local level, because that's how we mandate locality must take care of the needy. And specifically in the pharmacy area, they're not paying out as much as they were because we have people on the program now. That's a savings to taxpayers.
Yeah, and Representative Edo Blue, I'm curious about the Business and Industry Association. As Kevin said, and thank you again, Kevin, for the call, strong backers. So here you have this sort of typically Republican-aligned interest saying, yeah, go Obamacare.
Right. Well, and so I'm a business guy, actually. I own a number of businesses, so I am in the fray, you know, working a business on a continuing basis. I mean, the reality is, to your point, there are, of this 47,000, about 27,000 of them are having some amount of work. So there's about, you know, a certain amount that 20,000 maybe are not working at all. But and those employers are not stepping up to the plate. They're not offering this benefit to people, to their employees. And so I come, you know, I come full circle again. You know, like, are we, you know, are businesses paying their people fairly well in order to survive in the economy? And the costs are just so high that people can't keep up with the cost of healthcare.
Stephen, then Representative Rosenwald.
Just to ground this in some facts, you know, 71% of employers offer insurance coverage to their employees.
71%.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
It's much higher than the national average, 59%. But that doesn't mean that it's not declining. And in fact, it's been declining across the country.
And it's expensive. It's not like they're getting that benefit for free. Everybody pays a premium and so forth. Go ahead, Representative Rosenwald.
Well, the one thing that hasn't come up, and it's sort of relevant to people who are working, because when the Affordable Care Act was written, the Medicaid expansion was mandatory. There were financial subsidies written into the law for people whose income was above 100% of the poverty line, but no subsidies for people whose income is below 100% of the poverty line. So two-thirds of this 46,000 group of people on the Medicaid expansion have incomes below 100% of poverty. If this program goes away, they will not be able to afford insurance for sure because they won't get a subsidy and they also won't be subject to the mandate. So employers will see that uncompensated care creeping back up, going to affect their bottom line by higher insurance premiums.
Well, here's an email that just came in to that point about higher insurance premiums. This person says the ACA has destroyed the health care options for the working young. Our son had to choose between a catastrophic policy for $159 a month with a $6,850 deductible and a $300-plus month policy that still had a $3,000 deductible. He ended up taking the catastrophic plan because he was going to be penalized anyway for not having insurance. This person says, we wonder why young people aren't saving for retirement. So that gets to this whole thing about, you know, why the costs are so high and whether certain options were taken off the market by the Affordable Care Act. Steve Norton, do you want to jump in there?
Two things. One, law of averages will tell you that there's always going to be outliers on the other side. People who benefit hugely from this program, and I think we've heard a couple of those. Those are folks with addiction problems and other things. And you're going to hear from the other side, which is the Affordable Care Act took products off the market that people wanted. And the question that I have to ask as a public policy person is, where do you define the public policy? Is it that average experience or the outliers?
And who is the public?
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see if we can get one more call in. And this is Ricky in Manchester. Hi, Ricky. Go ahead and do the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning. Vala Margulis. I just wanted to say that it was a brief but prideful moment as a New Hampshire citizen to be able to tune into the radio, hear two opposing sides on an issue that I care about during an election season and have there be absolutely no vitriol and me walking away from the conversation actually believing that I'm being fairly represented and I have people in my corner who aren't necessarily going at each other's throats but are concerned with my well-being as a citizen. I really appreciate it.
Well, Ricky, thank you so much.
Ricky,
what a lovely
just made
comment.
What a great call.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Thank you, Ricky. I can honestly say that I don't think I've ever heard that on the show.
Wonderful.
Well, especially in this election season where passions are running high, and we understand that. But
we do
Ricky,
that well.
That's what we try to do on this program. So thank you very much for calling in and recognizing that. So last question for all of you. As we said earlier, this Republican plan, Representative LaChance's sort of middle way to fund Medicaid expansion, received a huge vote of support yesterday, 17-1 in committee. So Representative LaChance, you first. What's next? Do you care to speculate?
You know, education is next. You know, the more we educate, the more people understand the program. You know, whether you agree with it or don't agree with it, something needs to be fixed at the federal level. We're doing what we can do right now for our state. We have 47,000 people who are going to be faced without insurance, and they are some of the most needy. This is not Obamacare. This is a New Hampshire plan. We do not want to have uncompensated care continue to go up. That's a hidden tax. My friend Senator Bradley has done a great job explaining that. You know, that costs everybody from health care costs to insurance costs. The business industry is behind this, all the leaders, BIA, all the chambers, et cetera. And most importantly, we're going to get these people substance abuse. We're going to continue to get out of this opioid crisis. We will continue to educate. I will bring this issue to the floor. I'll bring it to the bill goes to the finance committee. It'll go to the House for an up or down vote. And if it gets the okay, we're going to send it to the finance committee. They'll
for the costing of it.
They'll
so
do
forth.
The yeah. And I'll present a case there. And then if it gets a favorable rating out of finance, I'll bring that to the floor again. We'll go for a final vote. I'm confident we are going to pass this bill. I think with education and the fact that we have 47,000 people that are just going to be let out to dry, that can't happen. I won't let that happen. I'll do everything in my power. So I think everybody will see the light at the end. And this is a short-term solution for a long-term problem that needs to be addressed.
Okay, so a long process there in the House.
Sure.
And then it goes to the Senate, where things are more favorable because the Senate was the body that worked out Medicaid expansion in the first place.
In the first place, I believe. I think the you know, the more and more representatives that I talk to, especially some of the folks that are on the right side of the aisle, when I say right, on the far right side, having conversations with them saying, well, maybe this isn't a bad idea. Maybe I need to look at that. How do I explain we're not going to take the $450 million? That's going to be the tough question that the electorate is going to have to ask next election. Did they do what was needed for us in New Hampshire?
Representative Edelblue, you care to make predictions, hopes?
No predictions, you know, because this is going into the House, and we'll see kind of where it comes out. I just think
Donna Sitek used to say it was like herding cats, but
herding
cats,
exactly. I mean, I think we can do better. I don't think we're really focusing on the real problem. You know, we all believe in the safety net, not a security fence. At some point, we have to recognize that federal money is not free money. This is our money that we're sending down there. The federal debt just continues to spiral out of control. You know, we are mortgaging our grandkids and our kids' futures here, and we act like we're doing something courageous, but not really solving the problem. So I think we can do better.
Representative Rosenwald.
I'm focused on the health and well-being of people who live in New Hampshire right now. And over the next week, I'm going to work hard with my caucus to get up to the 161 Democratic votes that are possible if everyone is there. And hopefully the Republicans will also be working within their caucus to deliver enough votes to have a majority.
So you're going to try and convince Democrats to support Representative LaChance's bill, even though there are issues that you have with it. You're still going to say, look, let's get on board with this.
I think we've improved it through hard work and collaboration across party lines and across chambers. Okay. So I'm going to work to do that.
Steve Norton.
As my mentor, Marty Gross, who unfortunately recently died,
yes,
used to tell me, we get to through the ideology, that's 25% of the way, and then we get to the money.
All right.
And so finance, I think, will be the real telltale for this particular bill.
Okay. All of you, thank you so much. I want to echo Ricky for coming in and just having a terrific discussion. I really, really appreciate it. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Graham. Our producer is Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. And I'm Laura Kanoy.